review with algorithm, and you were talking about involving people in newer causes.
Yes, we were citing off some of their people, but the cause itself, the cause of the hitherism and so on, and as a cause of the council of theater, had attracted a number of some people who were active in the local provinces like New York, Jewish, New York, Maccabees, and Pittsburgh, Chicago, and so on and so forth, who were also very much interested in recognizing the great need to begin to think in much larger terms of the Palestinian theater than they did in terms of the local philanthropies. Maybe caught the imagination of Henry Morgenthau and Truman like Henry Morgenthau, attracted by many great names of the United States President and Secretary of the Treasury. Attracted through him, attracted by Roosevelt. But then there was a shift in the economic power in America, in Jewish economic power. In between the World War I and World War II, those who engaged in their large-scale enterprise, and they had not yet been taught to give substantially because they had no position in their communities. Henry Montour is a genius. He was able to mobilize them into action and to get a follow-up of their action with their money. I look on Harry Montour as, shall I say, the reorganizer of Jewish life in America on an organizational basis, because it was through his efforts that the UJA finally became the largest fundraising organism, Jewish fundraising organism in the United States. And to this day, it's so overshadowed all the rest of them that in New York, New York City, for example, the New York Jewish philanthropies have now merged in their campaign, the United Jewish Appeal campaign, because New York was one-fifth of what they're going to raise for the United Jewish Appeal. And so they decided to unite this year for the first time, as they have many other communities. Along this line, because I was one of the earliest workers in the cause, I developed a national acceptability, and I became national chairman of speakers for the United Jewish Appeal. Several years, I was a national chairman, director of the United Jewish Appeal, was a national campaign cabinet of the United Jewish Appeal. I held many, was chairman of many special committees of the United Jewish Appeal. I represented the United Jewish Appeal at many gatherings with important people like the Export Import Bank chairman and people like that in Washington. London. I was called to Israel in 1950 by Mr. Ben Gurion, small group called to Israel, because the needs after the state was formed, after immigration of something like 200,000 a year, Israel couldn't possibly support them economically, support his immigration economically. At the time, the Marshall Plan was first coming in, the 24 program was first coming in, and we began to seek various other means of generating funds for the economic ability of Israel, and the philanthropic taking care of Israel's wealth and needs. And at that time, we discussed methods of approaching the United States government through the 24 program and the Marshall Plan, and arrived at the conclusion that, as hard as it seemed at the time, because the largest amount up to that date of the UJA was $50 National Chairman of the Speakers. I was the National Chairman of the Guardian. I was the National Chairman of the Collections. I traveled over the country more than any one individual, I think. Mobilizing communities, organizing communities, speaking out differences between the Jewish appeal and the local philanthropies, getting people together, mobilizing sentiment.
When Ben-Gurion called you and asked you to come to Israel, was it then that he charged you to do this
job? No, I was with a group. There were only about five of us. They were just sounding out a group of Americans who knew the American Jewish community. And I, at that time, because of the UJA experience, they knew practically as many Jews as anybody, any one Jew knew at that time. Mm-hmm. But for UJA, I'd been all through the country, everywhere, organizing and bringing people together, doing things, talking, and raising funds. It was at that time that I traveled with Alvin Barkley, was vice president. I met with Truman several times. I traveled with Eleanor Roosevelt several times. I traveled with Golda Meir. I traveled with Charette, Evans, people, Ben Gurion.
Do you have any special memories of Truman in relation to this?
Yes, there are a lot of memories. I mean, he was just wonderfully outspoken or something. Really, become very deeply a good old Christian, almost country boy way. This was good. And if it was good, he was good. Not knowing the detail, without understanding its greatness, and of course he didn't talk about it much more important people than I am. Abe Feinberg was one interested in introducing me, and David Niles, who was his connection with minority groups in the United States, and was very friendly with David Niles, and wished to meet at the White House and talk things over. I wish I had something more to do with them. I did at the time when Truman said he needed recognition in the state, but that was strictly Abe Feinberg and Truman's partner out there in Kansas City, Jacobson. But there was also I am once when Truman, without knowing what really I say that I don't think he knew what he was doing. But of course, it was Dean Acheson who was in real trouble. But Truman, after the state was declared, that fought and realized it comes to the point where I wanted to go back to a trusteeship. And those were tough days. And through this cause, as I said, I got to see the leadership. I attended the World's Highest Convention in Missouri in 1937. Well, I went to Palestine the first time in 1937, and I went in 1937. Palestine was under mandate. And we've gone on for a couple of years since this was in the process of two mandates and state limits several times too. But we have a deep interest in everything there. Before I get to Israel itself, I was one of the founders also. Ed Norman, who is now the American Israel Cultural Foundation. I forgot what his original name was. It was in the early 30s. I began to give pictures to the then Tel Aviv Museum on Dizengoff Street, on Rothschild Boulevard, rather, in Dizengoff's house it was, back there already in the 30s, before there was a state. All during that time, the groundwork was being laid for a state. Then the groundwork for a national home, the groundwork for a state. And the Weizmann, president of Israel, and Golda Meir very well. I took Golda Meir up and met Henry Luce, and
How do you feel today with the announcement?
At
the end. It may as well be a recording. It's an important announcement that she's ended her service.
She says irrevocable now, but I don't know. It's irrevocable. I don't want to get into this without comment on, I think, of the current situation in Israel. I may be able to talk about that later. But Americans are a culture I'm very proud of because most of the people, most of the Zionists, the people originally interested in Israel, Palestine and Israel, Jewish Palestine and Israel, which is only in the welfare and the kibbutzim and the moshavim and the economic development, but in the cultural development, it's absolutely essential, particularly the Jews. This has to be called with all the museums of Israel, and all the theater in Israel, and the orchestras, and the music hall, the glass museum, the stamp museum, the alphabet museum.
What's the alphabet museum?
The history of alphabets all over the world. The alphabets were created. Great museum there. But these are all supported, and all the music schools and the art schools are all supported. American Israel Culture. As a matter of fact, I'm going to a meeting of the American Israel Culture Board. It's the International Board of the Israel Museum on May 1st and 3rd. There's a little part of the meeting, I think, is going on. Anne's reading the literature on right now on the agenda of the meeting. But anyway, we've given them many, many pictures and works of art. We'll give some more. This has been a continuing interest, as has been the Hebrew University and the Weizmann Center. My father's books are with the Hebrew University of Israel. An important collection of Judaica became much more important after the Hebrew period because most of the East European writing was destroyed in the Hebrew period. My father had them. The National Jewish Library in Jerusalem, which is part of the Hebrew University. But I've always been interested in all the presidents and many people in the faculty and done things, given things to them, given them all the scholarships. But anyway, also interested, I was on the American Board for Weizmann Institute for many, many years. The reason I say for that, when I was 65, I got off all active boards. And when I was 70, I got off all inactive boards.
And now how many are you on now? Really?
Well, the only ones I'm on are the ones where you can't get off, like additional to the age of a charter. Once you're on, your life member, you can't get off. Well, I've written many letters saying that other men should be on. Well, I'm not on the Chamber of the Economy. There is one exception. I think they knew where we started. I thought I could take a part. I would join the board just to get it started. It was a new thing. But I would only stand for the first 3 years or what the first term would be. I believe I would have at least much brains than I have. I'd much rather see them take something a bit better than I can do it. And, I'm sure they have just as much interest. Anyway, what I'm proudest of is the Israel Bonds. The reason I'm proudest of is because I always believe that my mom believes that the best charity is the nomination of charity. And to create the logistical base for Israel, the logistical and economic base for Israel to do away with philanthropy and outside help is more important than anything else. There are many battles fought over this. First battle were the Orthodox Jews, because Jewish life, you don't charge interest for free loans, and I was no stronger advocate than I was of free loans. But free loans could do this job. This requires something much bigger than just free loans. And I'd like to tell a story now that I don't think many people know. I don't think anybody knows except maybe I don't know properly. I remember at the discussion of the interest rate that these bonds should carry. ratio was at 3.5%. The reason it was 3.5%, we had a meeting. And Israel at that time was paying 30%, 35% for money, 25% for money, kiting checks, doing everything to meet deadlines, financial deadlines. And then Kaisling said, if we issue a bond issue, we have to assume that it's perpetual. We have to assume that the Jewish present state of Israel is the best in the world. And the United States government is paying 3.5%. It's the greatest credit in the world. We'll pay 3.5%. And we pay 3.5% for this issue. And that's, it's, since then, by the way, it's proven itself to be the best credit. There's certainly no better credit in the world.
Alec, I hadn't realized that there was opposition to bonds. Any kind of a religious
there, well,
basis.
There was, there was religious, and there was, of course, the income tax deduction, the gifts, you say. And the bonds are no deduction, you pay for the
investment.
And the people who, one of the supporters who somehow or other found out, look, I can give $1 million and it only costs me really $200,000. Give this much and this for this. And just say, whereas in bonds, there are no such thing as bonds. You buy a dollar's worth, you pay a dollar, and you pay tax on your income. That's all there is to it, see? And we certainly had opposition from that. We had opposition, I told you, in the first day, the Jews, because once again, went against all Jewish tradition. All Jewish tradition. That's freedom. And, then there was opposition because it drew a given amount of capital in the Jewish community. It drew off a certain amount. It went to something that they weren't at the time too sure of. That there would be a return. There would be a return. But those battles were all fought. But today I say I'm proudest of it because I remember in those first discussions in Jerusalem in 1950, I was sitting there with Teddy Kotick, Gurion, Ivan, and Esther Hurlitz, and there's four or five others in there. And the general opinion, we had tested out the banking community of America. We'd gone to Lehman Brothers, Lazard Fair, all the Jewish bankers from Lowe. Everybody discouraged us terribly. I could never think of anything like that. The only one who gave an encouraging word was Mr. Stanley, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Company. He says, I have faith, and his faith is strictly on faith, that Jews will give this much, they have this kind of dedication, and I can tell you right now, they'll do anything. Go ahead. But anyway, then came the discussion with him out, and, I remember, as I said, the previous year we raised a large amount of money, just $50 million. And Ike says, look, I'll try. And I believe from my experience over a 3-year period, and we were going to sell these bonds over a 3-year period, we sell $25 million a year, which would be $75 million in 3 years. And then a large discussion goes, shall we base it on what we can do or what the need is? You know, and the need was $500 million. The need wasn't $75 million, it was $500 million. And we decided that we have to be honest with the American Jew. So the need is $500 million, that's what we're going for. And lo and behold, in the first year we sold $50 million. And in 1974, the goal was $1 billion.
$1 billion
this year. So $1 billion this 1 year. They've already sold practically $3 billion in the history of the bonds, eh? And this year the goal is $1 billion in gold bonds. It's without question the most important ingredient in the economic evolution. Without this economic base, you couldn't have a sale as well. It's always so. And this is fantastic. It's fabulous and magnificent institutional life. And it doesn't need to explain. You don't have to explain whether it's 12 years or 6 years saving the bond or anything like that. They don't ask any question of whether they'll get paid. Nobody asks any question anymore. every question they ask, where I can get them.
And the sales have gone beyond the Jewish.
Pardon?
And the sales have gone beyond the Jewish community.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, now we've enlarged it. That's why I'm proud of it. Because we decided, I thought, there's some of the mechanics of having a local bank on the base, mm-hmm. being the local depository, and going over to the Chase Bank, but the local bank, like Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh National, issues the bonds, you know. The money comes into them. They got the coupons put into them, and they pay them off. And then we began to work on labor unions, and then we worked on pension funds. It's hard to believe, but that is steel workers from the bank. $1 million worth of that. Steel workers have no trade. That's the national trade. That's not speaking of the locals. And now it's in pension funds. It's in insurance companies. There's practically no bank anywhere. No bank. Anywhere in the United States. They dare not have them. But they you know, they're despite the fact that they pay banks 5%, 5.5% now. Banks can get 10%, 12%, but they buy Israel bonds, and everybody buys them. And this, I think, is the greatest contribution to Jewish life. I think it created a new Jewish self-respect. Because it's interesting, the question of respect is not because, I wish it weren't only for the person that he stood for, but it's what goes with the person, and particularly what money goes with the person. Unfortunately, the respect is how much you have, rather than who are you or what are you, how much money do you have. I'm talking to the general community, mm-hmm. and that's what the bankers think. And if anybody thinks the bank has it because the bankers represent, you know, money, therefore it's respectable, therefore it's acceptable, therefore it's the right thing to do, therefore you don't know what you should do. And I would say that, so that's one of the reasons I think that Henry Montour, who envisioned all these things and carried them through, actually carried them through, is single-handedly to be the most important man in the evolution of Jewish organization life in the whole world. Because what happened in the United States has been duplicated in other places, not large. You know, we still can't sell bonds in England. The Bank of England doesn't allow it. A certain country can't sell bonds. So the Englishmen buy them in Amsterdam.
Oh, they do. There is.
Yeah. Oh, but they can't. We can't sell them. We can't sell them in England.
Is there any place else where you can't sell them?
There are a few countries, yes, where you can't sell them. Well, most countries you can sell them. You can't sell them in Switzerland. But in most of the Western countries, you know, most South American countries you can't sell them. About half of them you can sell them. But anyway, that's because of the countries themselves. But anyway, I like to think of being at the fringes of this. This is a major contribution. What I believe is the most progressive individual international act in the history of the world in the last couple of hundred years. The creation of the state of Israel. I honestly believe that. I would say the Declaration of Independence is important. But in the contemporary time, certainly 150 years, I can't think of anything that does as much for the world about the creation of the state of Israel. And all the confusion you have right now is because of the greatness of this contribution. But it takes a long while for the vested interests are willing to shake off their vested indecencies.
They're inherited in those instances.
Inherited, mm-hmm. invested, greedy indecencies. Except some of the, I call it, Judaic philosophies that come to the station of Israel. Israel has been able to address herself, unfortunately, some of her greater ideas. I think that she was really created for because of her security problems.
Yes, but still she has made.
Still,
when
you think
tremendous
of how much she has made, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable. So, I think that these are the things that I am grateful for. I'm grateful to them for letting me do it. It made me much bigger than I am. It made me much happier than I am. But not without its frustrations, not without its disappointments, not without its sadness and all of that. Cried many a time. But I'm happy that with most of my intimate friends, this is my identification. And this leads me to what you asked me before, my classmates at Yale. Harry Luce, who covers the importance of time, a very close friend of mine, and I saw him mostly on Israel. And I like to think I had something to do with the first big breakthrough when life came out with the editorial, Israel's Here to Stay, which is a real breakthrough because they had taken a contrary attitude up to that time. But I've had friends, my class was very distinguished in the fields of literature, in the fields of banking, in the fields of enterprise, in the fields of politics, everything else. And invariably when they meet me, the thing they talk to me about is about Israel. The thing I want to talk to them about is about Israel, not that we don't talk about the current American scene, but they invariably ask me about Israel, and I invariably enjoy telling them, and I think they are very glad to know. I think they love me more because my feelings of being a Jew. It was took a long, long time, I think. And it grew over the years. But I got strength from the fact that Israel existed. Not the reverse. The fact that Israel grew and grew and grew made them respect me more and more.
Enrich us all.
Pardon?
It did enrich us all.
It made us so much stronger, so much more acceptable, so much more... It made us more decent, though, I think. You asked me about... rightly so, I should tell you about my children. I have only two. Son and daughter. Usual problems. Both of average mentally, both well educated. John went on to Falk School and Exeter for 4 years, Phelps Exeter. That was some gap in our parent child relationship. I went to a small public high school, he went to the finest all prep schools, and he went on to Harvard. My daughter went to Winchester Thurston for 5 years, and then went to Harvard. My son John dropped out of Harvard, part of the dropout age. So many were dropping out of so many universities. Spent a good deal of time playing bridge. Married, divorced, married again. But now, fortunately, a rather successful as a programmer, computer programmer. My daughter Mary. Graduate, Phi Beta Kappa, junior year at Harvard, MA at Columbia, Latin American History, a PhD from Stanford, Latin American History, now has taught at Stanford, and is now teaching at the University of California, San Francisco, French, teaching Latin American history, as well as the history of women. Mary's husband is associate professor of English at Stanford, the ABMA and PhD from Harvard, served on the SS Forrestal for 3 years, Lieutenant Junior Grade. Won several important literary prizes. And just dealing with Max Beerbohm, just published by Alfred Knopf. He's recently been engaged in translating the poems of Pablo Neruda and comparing them with T.S. Eliot. Married husband, and one daughter, Sarah, age 4.5. Like all grandchildren, is the light of our lives. As for my own marriage, graduated from the University of Pittsburgh at age 19, got a master's degree at age 20, concentrated on personnel practices, and in the days before labor relations, took an active part in writing the workers' compensation laws in Ohio and other benefits for employees. I met her at a party given by my friend Charlie Rosenblum. Courted her for about 2 years. The usual ups and downs of courtship. We were married in December of 1935. Since then, we have lived happily, raising our children, traveling from the United States and abroad, South America, and around the world, sharing our mutual interests. And interests and resourcefulness, ingenuity, enhanced our experiences, our interests, our perceptions, between the two of us, we feel that this has been a successful, satisfying, and fulfilling companionship. Each of us stimulating the other, and trying to enlarge each other's interests. This period of our marriage has been not without the usual sadness, the loss of family and friends, children? A few misunderstandings as far as major goals and desires are concerned. Despite our intense interest in things Jewish, ours has not been what I would call a Jewish household. Yes, we have mitzvahs on the door. We have some Judaica around the house. But unfortunately, we've not observed the Sabbath or any holidays except the high holidays. Occasionally, flowers and fruit and vines for our vestibule. We simulated sukkah. And we had a big party in 1947, the United Nations voted to set up a state of Israel. Of course, during most of our married life, I was the president of the Development Corporation of Pittsburgh, as well as on the boards of Webster Hall, the Hall Corporation, and Hall Corporation, Hall Company. My particular job to do, mostly to do with financing. Companies. Although I also engaged for quite a few years in the actual renting and running some of the apartment houses. In 1950, having lost my older brother, younger brother, some heart attacks, I decided to retire and live the rest of my life to my own interests, which I continue. Unfortunately, I engaged very little in athletics, although I played some golf until 10 years ago, some handball until 10 years ago. We were always great walkers. And this we continue. I never learned how to enjoy resort life. We were never sunbathers or swimmers, although we love to walk on the edge of the water, which we have done. In waters, long waters, in many parts of the world. We have been to Europe many times. Latin America, down one coast of the other. Studying history, culture, political systems, education systems, economic systems. I wonder if we have visited. Family vacations, we've had very few of. In 1956, we took Mary and John to Israel, to Europe, and on several other occasions we've taken Mary to Europe. Other than that, we haven't vacationed very much together because the children went to camp. Age 6 until the time we went to college. And this was their summer holiday. My children both went to Sunday school in Shalom. With Mary, being a little more Jewish than John, you seem to want to know about how things look way back and how they look now. That's where what my own Kishon was and is on my world. Well, Pittsburgh is certainly a little different than it was when I first came here in 1921. There was seemingly more poverty then than now. But somehow, poverty now strikes me more. Seems to be more seamy, dirtier.
More demeaning?
More grim. The poverty is of a different kind. Maybe I didn't notice it before. The poverty is pretty much concentrated on the blacks. And a few of the ethnic groups, very few whites. And the institutions created to serve them are bigger and better. Somehow or other, they don't seem to get at them. Go into any social agency, because we have the Department of Health, food stamps, food stamp service. And the grimness is more frightening. And I seem to have known it, even during the Depression days of apple sawing. There seems to be a certain meanness and violence and frightfulness about it that I don't seem to recall in the 20s and 30s. There are more institutions to deal with the problems on a national, on a federal and local basis. And there's more learning, more laws on the books, the explosiveness seems